Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 346 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyrer, your host once again. And today my guest is Maddie Osman. And Maddie is the founder and creator of The Blogsmith, which is a company that, as the name might imply, focuses on creating data-driven content for typically for businesses in the B2B world, but has also done quite a bit for some larger scale personal injury attorneys and has written a book. The book is called Writing for Humans and Robots, The New Rules of Content Style. And I think we as attorneys, we gravitate towards content marketing because it's something I think we understand. And what the book tends to do is to give you a lot more resources and a lot more understanding of exactly how to do that writing. And from there, you may find yourself in a position where you might want to use a company, a service such as Maddie's, The Blogsmith. So it's a really interesting conversation. You can tell that she's spent a lot of time in the trenches understanding how Google worked and how content marketing works. So I think it's something that we could all benefit from. And so without any further delay, here is Maddie Osman. Maddie Osman, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a thrill to have you with us today, Maddie. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So I think I discovered a love for content probably in my early days of college. I was actually a web designer at the time. And through this college job I had working with student organizations and like updating the bookstore website and events and things like that, I discovered that I really liked creating the content that goes on the design more so than designing where the content lives. And so, yeah, I graduated. I had a couple of full-time jobs where I did sales, thinking that that would be my foot in the door to do marketing with the respective companies that I worked for and freelancing on the side. And eventually I just kind of didn't have enough patience, I guess, and decided that I wanted to do my own thing. And eventually the freelance writing business, where I also did a couple other things like social media and website design, I really narrowed in on the writing aspect, the content aspect, and then decided to sort of change from this freelancer model to more of an agency model. And so that's kind of where we're at today.
So you were fingers on the keyboard, creating content, writing out long form and other types of deliverables for clients, basically, right?
Yes. And I would say a lot of sort of like B2B technology clients, because again, kind of going back to that web design experience, a lot of my early freelance writing assignments were related to that. There were more technical topics. Right. I found that, you know, that niche tended to pay well compared to, say, writing about lifestyle. But as I told you, too, I've also worked with a couple of personal injury lawyers. So lots of different topics and working with different industries and professionals. And it was definitely interesting to be the one doing the writing and learning all the things that I learned to be able to represent these businesses well.
Well, I think content marketing in general, one of the things that attorneys tend to think that they understand more than, say, some other types of marketing approaches. Like, you know, the pay-to-click marketing model, that's really pretty esoteric for most attorneys. As an example, but tell them to write something about what they do or the law they practice or the kinds of problems they solve. Most attorneys feel, well, I can do that. And so they embark on, you know, that mission and then are disappointed when it doesn't play out as the way they had hoped. And so what I want to do with explore with you is connecting the dots here from, it's more than just writing a blog post.
Right.
You need to know what to write about and how to write it. And so can you talk to like some of the things that you think that the clients typically aren't aware of when it comes to positioning content properly?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's worth addressing what you're saying too, which is that I actually agree. I think that most lawyers probably could do exactly what we're doing without our help. I think most clients work with us because it's more of a time and energy thing than it is like a complete lack of writing experience or, you know, knowing how to formulate ideas. I think a lot of clients work with us because they're understaffed and they need help to get to the quantity that they want to write. And they need somebody to lean on who they know is going to do a good job and that they're not going to have to babysit and that they're not going to have to do heavy edits for, somebody who just gets it. Let's go back to your question. You said things that they're not aware of, right?
Well, for instance, I'll help lead you down what I'm thinking about here. And you already hit on a couple of the buzzwords. Quantity. Quantity is really important. Consistency was another frequency.
Totally.
And another thing you mentioned, and positioning the content, knowing what to write about. Well, for instance, if you ask an attorney like myself, I do estate planning. Daniel, what content are you going to put on your website? Well, I can write about wills, I can write about trusts, I can write about powers of attorney and all these other kinds of things. And then I know what to write about. And so I'll write one article and then I get busy and bogged down and I don't write again for another month or so. And then another one, it doesn't quite match the first one in terms of format or stylistic approach and, you know, isn't the taking advantage of some of the built-in blog points that are important, like subheadings and what have you. So that's where I think attorneys are disconnected from content marketing, where a company like yours can help, you know, make that clear to them and take it over for them if need be.
Sure. Yeah, I think I hear what you're getting at. I think the biggest thing really in doing content for any client, for any website, for any purpose is mostly to have a process. And I think that that's something that we've really thought a lot about because we have to do it for all these different topics and clients and needs. And it's, you know, answering things like, first of all, from our perspective, because we're helping a lot of our clients to be found in relevant search. It's starting really with that data and what are people searching for? What questions do they have, even in related to a certain keyword phrase? You know, what does the existing landscape look like? And using that as sort of competitive data for pulling together something that's brand new from this other perspective that hasn't been covered before. So even just like the SEO aspect of things and keyword research and, you know, using that data and making sure you're using it in a way so that this piece will show up in relevant search. I think that's a big thing that probably most lawyers don't have time to do because it is digging into the data. It's, you know, a different sphere of genius than probably even I have. I mean, I have people on my team who specialize in doing this very specific part of this process. The writing, again, like I think almost anybody could do that day in, day out with just enough time and energy and things like that. But once we get into the more specialized pieces of the process, I think that's where a lot of people could benefit from working with a partner. And I guess another thing that we talk about a lot and think about a lot is not just the writing, the copy, but also the visuals and sort of like art direction within a piece, because internet readers, if you are creating web communications, they're very fickle. They have short attention spans. They want to find their answer quick, you know, and they want to have a great reading experience. And I think that when you are writing for an online audience, if you do want to show up in search, there is a temptation to, you know, stuff it with keywords and, you know, just only focus on the quantity, but not the actual quality. And that's another thing too, that I think that a lot of people overlook in trying to game the search system. But our sort of guiding principle is that Google's purpose is to serve people great content. And so no matter how they finagle that with the current iteration of the algorithm, that is ultimately their goal. And so that is what we try to meet with the content that we create, more so than any, you know, individual check marks on rankings, although that's, of course, a part of it too.
Well, let's talk about keyword research, because I think for most attorneys, that's kind of, it's like black magic. We don't know what that means.
Sure.
I, as a techie, think I do. But for the most part, we don't know what keyword research means.
Sure.
We're like, wait a second, I'm the attorney. I know what to write about. Well, do you really know what questions are being asked by the public?
Right.
And that disconnect is something that I think dooms a lot of content in the legal space. So talk about the importance of keyword research and how that's kind of done and what function it serves.
Totally. I think that before you really start any piece of content, you have to consider the goal of why you're creating that content. And if you don't have one, then you probably shouldn't start on that piece yet. And so I think that the purpose that keyword research serves is helping you meet whatever your stated goals are. And I can explain that further by talking about the concept of like the sales funnel and the buyer's journey.
Yep.
So if you're a lawyer, there are all sorts of different touch points that somebody could discover who you are. There's sort of like the top of the funnel content where, you know, maybe it's more how-to in nature. So if I'm going back to like my personal injury lawyer writing days, I'm thinking like, maybe it's like what to do immediately following an accident or something like that. Right. At which point I would say something like, before you talk to the police, make sure that you've talked to a lawyer so that you don't, you know, incriminate yourself or, you know, put yourself in a bad position before any judgment even begins.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's one touch point, right? That somebody could come in at and need, for example, a personal injury lawyer's services. From there, you get to like the middle of the funnel. And if we're just speaking very generally, the middle of the funnel is probably where people are aware that they have a problem. They might be aware that there are different solutions to that problem. And they're probably starting to at least make a list of what those solutions are. And maybe one solution is deal with it myself, for example, in small claims court, or again, whatever the situation is. Another solution is, you know, working with this type of lawyer, or maybe they're considering, you know, maybe they don't know what type of lawyer they need yet. So that's part of them becoming problem and solution aware. So then we get to like the bottom of the funnel, which is where people make purchasing decisions, which is where they move forward with a company, whether it's for a product or service or whatever. But that's where, you know, they're narrowing down that list and, you know, maybe picking one solution, maybe picking a couple of solutions, just again, depending on the problem. But that's where content that, you know, maybe compares to, let's just say, for example, two lawyers directly, you know, that might be a bottom of the funnel piece, or like a case study of like a really successful case, even like testimonials that you've turned into some like appealing PDF or, you know, merchandise nicely and visually on your website. Those are all kind of more of like that bottom of the funnel piece of content. And so anyway, just to kind of wrap it all up, you need to have content at each of these stages. You need to be anticipating the needs of your audience, your prospects. And I think keyword research helps you to sort of meet and match those needs. And it also gives you the opportunity to see what's already out there so that you can do a better job.
Yeah, I think what happens is that we end up staying at that top of the funnel stage without a comprehensive keyword strategy approach.
Sure.
And the understanding of what content you're going to write for what position in the funnel the buyer is going through. The easy thing for the attorney to do and think they're filling in all the blanks is they're at the top of the funnel and they're doing all that just kind of awareness.
Right, right.
You know, marketing. And that only gets you, as you said, you know, to the top of the funnel. It doesn't help get you through the rest of it. And correct me if I'm wrong, sometimes the writing, the approach to writing as you move down the funnel, the writing has to change a little too.
Totally. I think that I started the blogsmith really focusing on blog posts because that is still, I would say, what we're best at in terms of the keyword research, the execution, just the full process around it. But I will say in this past year, some of our most popular types of content have really changed. We've gotten a lot of ebooks, which I would say are probably top middle of the funnel, depending. We've done a lot of case studies, which I would say are very bottom of the funnel. And so, you know, even like a press release or web page copy for a landing page, it all serves very different purposes and it does require a different approach.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Himmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. You mentioned a while back about factoring in the graphic elements, the content. That's another area where I think we as attorneys, you know, because look, we trade in words.
Right.
That's basically, you know, what our currency is. We
totally. We
write and write and write and write and write some more. And so what I see a lot of times is that when we're writing for our website, we keep writing as if we're writing to the court and or we're writing for a law review article. And point about the web visitor has to have a really engaging and enjoyable reading experience. If they open up something on your website and it looks like a, you know, a novel, you're going to have a very difficult time getting them through that content.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think kind of digging in the visual aspect and the reader experience. I think, first of all, it's just put yourself in the visitor's shoes. Would somebody looking for your services connect with this text? And it's easier to do if you get outside yourself, or, you know, say, for example, you send it to someone else in your network and maybe you trade going through each other's websites from the outsider perspective, because that's what's going to be really the most helpful, is getting out of your own bias, your own preconceptions about, you know, what you thought about what you wrote or what you're displaying. I think it is important to get feedback and to consider that end person. And I think another thing to think about too is whether you're creating content for yourself or somebody else, it is really helpful to create some documents, like, for example, a writing style guide that just goes in and defines, like, your tone of voice, you know, certain jargon that comes up often. And jargon's okay as long as your audience understands it. You know, just other word choice things, how you go about the formatting aspect of writing, the subheadings, how, you know, what's a good source? What do you consider to be a reliable source? Things like that. It's really good to at least have a baseline document for that. And then you can always expand it over time if you don't have time right now to get really in depth with it. Things like persona documents are also really helpful so that you can keep that person in mind. You can even have that document open and sort of be physically looking at it as you're writing this copy and, you know, trying to consider that person as you're doing it. And then, yeah, going back to the visuals, I mean, I can't tell you how many clients, when we tell them that we do visuals and that's not an extra charge, it's part of our existing pricing for creating the content, they're amazed with that because it's not something that most writers do, but it is something that is a bottleneck that if we don't do it, could get in the way of that content getting published and then, you know, helping that brand with whatever their goals are, whatever stage of the buyer's journey they're trying to push people through. So the visuals, I think a lot of people take it for granted and don't consider it to be necessary. But man, it really changes how that content comes across when, say, for example, I'm not a super math-minded person, and I'm looking at a statistic that's comparing two numbers. It's hard for me to read that and make sense of it. But if I see a graph, it instantly makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge that we in the legal space have, and I'll raise my hand as being as guilty as anybody else, you know, you write the content and you say, okay, I got to slap a photo in here somewhere.
Right.
Right. Let me go find an interesting photo. Is it kind of close to the content that I'm writing about? You know, and you have that image disconnect that ends up not serving the purpose that it's intended to.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're talking about, like, especially just sort of the fallacy of stock photos.
Well, yeah, where, exactly.
Yeah. It's, I think in general, stock photos, it's just a bad idea, because if it's a free stock photo, then everybody has access to that. And so there's this one kind of joke in the software as a service space where there's this girl, she's like this redheaded girl, like typing away at her computer. And I've seen her like in 100 different places for different brands, their hero image on their website, which is like the first thing you see before you scroll, or in their social media. And they, you know, they superimpose their own text on it to try to make it a little bit more on brand. And the one thing that I think whenever I see that image, and I see it like almost every day, is how it's so like undistinctive of a brand, indistinctive. It is so like, it has nothing to do with any brand because every brand uses it.
Well, consider the legal space where we have, you know, the scales of justice and a gavel.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
Everywhere you look, it's the same thing. Now, I am just as guilty as anybody else about with the stock photos. Part of it is a, you know, it's a cop out in terms of time. You know,
sure.
It takes effort to, you know, generate original graphics like that. But I think
One
of the things that we as attorneys don't spend a lot of time doing is that it doesn't always have to be a photo. As you mentioned, it can be a graph. It can be an illustration. It can be a lot of different things that relate more to your content than a stock photo would. would.
Right. And it doesn't have to be a custom branded graphic either. That's something we do for our clients because we have capacity. We've built systems around that. But this is a great time. I'm just going to quickly plug my book because I have a chapter
that was the next question I was going to say. Sounds like it would be found in something in a book if somebody wrote a book on the subject. Which, by the way, Maddie has written a book. So let's talk about that. Tell us the name of the book.
Totally. So a book that I just launched this year is called Writing for Humans and Robots, The New Rules of Content Style. It was an Amazon bestseller in the SEO category when it debuted. So it's been getting a lot of good reviews. So hopefully that encourages you listeners to check it out. But there is one, chapter 9 is how to make your content more visually engaging. And I think I give like 8 different examples of things you could do. Probably one of them is custom branded images, but it's things like if it's on brand for you, maybe incorporate like a relevant GIF, or you could also embed a relevant YouTube video. It doesn't have to be yours if it's something that you're embedding and that is kind of like explaining a concept that you might have brought up and somebody did a really great job of that who's not, you know, a direct competitor to you. Or using things like we talked about statistics and how an image can make those a little bit more reader friendly. So there are websites like Statista where you can grab some that have already been created for popular categories. Another thing is like we write a lot of content, again, for like technology brands. And so I can remember, I'm just looking through the book pages right now, that I wrote an article about. It was like once your item ships, you know, from an e-commerce store, and it was examples of what that email looks like. So you could do examples or screenshots, and then you could also annotate those screenshots, and that's adding some context to an image. So, I mean, just so many different things you could do without really spending extra effort or even dollars on a designer that have a greater impact than a stock photo ever will.
Well, and I love the title of your book because it addresses, you know, the robot in the room, right?
Right.
So you want to be able to write for humans and the robot. So talk a little bit about the role of technology it has played in the development of content, both from the reading the content and from the generating content side of it.
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of people have gotten confused with like the initial search engine, the initial genesis of what Google search looked like. And just thinking back to the idea of, you know, you had to like define your keywords and add them in as a meta tag to your HTML and then stuff them a million times in the content in order for Google to pick up on like, oh, this is what I was trying to write about, or, you know, this is the topic. So nowadays we consider things like trying to overstuff a keyword into content, we consider that as quote unquote black hat SEO. It's something that's almost trying to game and manipulate the system instead of working with the way that it actually works now. And so just a very quick Google history lesson. In 2019, Google unveiled a new algorithm update that's called BERT, and it's something like bidirectional encoder something transformers. But basically what it means is that Google used to only read a search query, you know, from left to right, like how we read text. But now, as of this update, Google can read a text query, the full keyword phrase, backwards and forwards, and all the words in relation to each other. And so that really changed everything, because now Google can interpret context in your search versus just the exact keyword phrase. And so how this has sort of changed how we create content is, I think we can be a little less reliant on stuffing keywords. I mean, certainly we don't want to stuff keywords anymore, but
a little less rigid.
Less rigid. Yeah. That's a great way to put it, because Google can now understand the context of your text, certainly within the search, and I would say by extension, you know, on the page that it is crawling.
And let me, for our non-technical attorneys, kind of interpret that a little bit.
Sure.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Like, used to be, if you wanted to search for estate planning attorney, you put them in quotes because you want that whole phrase to be searched for. But now,
sure. And you might still do that if you want to get really exact from the search operator perspective. Correct. Yeah.
But now Google reads estate, attorney, planning, estate. It reads them all as separate words and puts that in context of what the sentence is that query is used for. So you get a much more dynamic search result that isn't dependent on a strict formulaic rule of how to use those keywords in the content. Is that close to being right?
Yeah, I think that's mostly correct. I think that the only thing to consider with, say, for example, switching around words in, if they're the same, you know, if you have three words in a keyword phrase and switching them around every which way, the only thing you have to consider in terms of your approach is, did switching the words change intent? And just to extrapolate that further, for those who don't, you know, live in Google search every day, when somebody types in a keyword phrase, they're wanting to solve a problem. And it's like, what does that keyword phrase tell us about the problem that they're trying to solve? And so by typing it in, and then by actually looking at the search engine results page that you see after you hit enter, just by analyzing that, you can kind of suss out what that intent is. And if that search engine results page is really fundamentally the same between this version of the keyword and some other variation of the keyword, or even different words being mixed in, then you can reasonably assume that the intent is the same.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, tell me quickly then how one would go about engaging with your company if they were so inclined to do so.
Sure. Yeah. Blog, so if,
just to make sure we're clear on that, the name of the company is The Blogsmith, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So I would say if you're interested, if you need any help with content, either writing it or creating the strategy around it, or even just you're doing it and you want like a second opinion, or just, you know, want to consider some other things like adding visuals or the SEO side of thing, et cetera, check out our website, which is theblogsmith.com. We have tons of portfolio samples up that you can check out. Again, we mostly work with B2B tech companies, but have certainly worked with various service providers and other industries as well. And so when it comes to getting started, we have a meeting just to kind of talk through goals and share a little bit more about our process. And then we have an intake form if you're interested in working with us. And that intake form is kind of, I would say, the basis for creating a style guide for your brand. We ask a lot of questions about products and competitors and customers and all that good stuff. And yeah, from there, we just agree on our initial topics, do any sort of research we need to do to get started there, and then get into a nice writing cadence so that you're never missing some consistent content for your brand.
You also offer a bunch of classes as well, right?
I do. Yeah, I would say the majority of them are on Skillshare. But what's really nice about those Skillshare classes is that they're like a 1 hour deep dive into like a very specific topic, like keyword research or like building out an editorial calendar according to your sales funnel and your personas and all that good stuff.
Well, I think one of the things they do is help illustrate where one might take advantage of a company like yours. You know, you take the class and you say, okay, now I see what needs to be done and I know what I'm capable of doing, but I also know what Blogsmith is, you know, really professional at. And so maybe there's an opportunity for a relationship there.
So that's exactly it. And it's kind of funny. My mom actually, when I started to do more like longer form how-to posts or like these Skillshare classes, she's like, oh, you're giving everything away. And I was like, no, I want to show people how complicated this is so that they don't want to do it, you know, because we have a good process for it. So it's not as complicated for us.
Exactly. And how long have you guys been around?
The Blogsmith as an agency has been around, I would say, since early 2020.
Okay.
And then I quit my full-time job to build out the writing business, I want to say 2016, early 2016, I think.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to get my hands on the book. I was hoping to have done so before our interview, but I'm anxious to do so now. And so it's available on Amazon and everywhere else where you can get quality reading material. So I urge all of our listeners to check out Writing for Humans and Robots, The New Rules of Content Style. Yes. And Maddie, it's been a delight having you with us today. And I look forward to staying in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me once again.
Thanks for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.